information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care. It shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Happy May Day! Or is it May Day, May Day, May Day? Our collective psyche is under attack. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to May Day 2009, episode 121 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, swine flu, and the pandemic prep. Three strange cases of 9/11 reminders, single bullet specters, JFK specter, Econo crash, comics, Chrysler, queuing up for conflict, the Columbine calls, more mass shootings, and the May Day news purge is all here, episode 121 of MediaMonarchy.com.
May 1st, 2003, weeks after the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq and the fall of Saddam Hussein, President George W. Bush announces,
"Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies had prevailed."
Bush speaks from the USS Abraham Lincoln after landing on the aircraft carrier in a Navy jet. But a mission accomplished banner displayed during his speech later becomes controversial as U.S. casualties in Iraq mount. 1960, during the Cold War, the Soviet Union shoots down an American U-2 spy plane over its territory. The Soviets capture the plane's pilot, Francis Gary Powers, holding him captive for nearly 2 years. 1931, the Empire State Building is dedicated in New York. For the next two decades, the 102-story skyscraper is the world's tallest structure. 1941. Also in New York, Citizen Kane premieres. Orson Welles' first feature film remains an all-time movie masterpiece. And 1967.
Love me tender.
Rock and roll singer Elvis Presley marries Priscilla Beaulieu. They divorce 6 years later. Today in history, May 1st, Ross Simpson, The Associated Press.
I thought I'd change it up just a little bit. And I thought that day in history was quite interesting. Anytime you can roll together, mission accomplished, and secret U-2 flights with Francis Gary Powers and the Empire State and Orson Welles and Elvis Presley. Now that's a way to kick off an episode of Media Monarchy. It's 1:21. It's May Day, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, and simulcast on the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 98.5 Free Radio Olympia. 93.9 Boulder Free Radio KBFR. And also thanks to CascadiaPublicRadio.org. You can, of course, get in touch and help spread the word through, of course, all the portals. All the little social networking tools, Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, Yahoo, Instant Messenger, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. So here we are. We made it through yet another week, somehow. If I sound a little stuffed up, I think I've accumulated some kind of allergies since I've moved to the Pacific Northwest, because I never used to get this snotty on the east side. So bear with me as I try and fight through it and figure out what's going on, while we try and figure out what's going on in the wider world. First off, let me say thanks to my man John in New York for hitting me up on Instant Messenger. It's amazing to be able to chat with people I've known, you know, most of my life on Facebook or whatever, and I haven't seen them for 20 years, and with people I've never met before as we congregate over the insane news. This time last week, as I was coming to you, we always try and take a look at the breaking news in the morning. And last week I mentioned something about, there seems to be a swine flu. And of course, as the show progressed and I checked the updates, I basically said, well, it looks like this is going to go big, viral, if you will. And of course it did. So there are times on Media Monarchy where what I try and do is give you news you haven't heard, or at least angles of that news that you haven't heard. But when there's stories this big, you pretty much know about the swine flu. And of course, we're going to get into it in just a minute. But let's glance at the latest. Alleged Nazi guard can be deported. out of Cincinnati. Doctor impersonator arrested. We've got bat disease forcing cave closures. That's from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And of course, SCOTUS Souter announces he's going to step down from the Supreme Court. And on and on and on. The other one that we do want to check out. Now, of course, it's not on the front page of Google News, but I clicked it, so we're there, from Reuters. U.S. to drop Israel lobbyist spy case. This is just from a few hours ago. The U.S. government on Friday said it would drop charges in an espionage case against two pro-Israel lobbyists because it was unlikely to win at trial and classified info would have to be discussed. That's, of course, Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman, both connected to AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. And they, of course, got some nice state secrets passed to them by Larry Franklin while he was an adjunct professor at Shepherd University in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. So, lo and behold, surprise, surprise, they're going to drop the case. And I wonder if some of those classified info, state secret kind of things are probably have to do with how we've done this for a long time. Takes two to tango a lot of the times. So that's the breaking news. And I take a breath and try and catch my breath. Usually we're tracking a million different stories in divergent areas. In the last week or so, there's been a few huge stories. The one we're going to get to, of course, after the flu passes, are all the amazing 9/11 reminders that we saw in the last week. That's, of course, the planes buzzing downtown Manhattan, the FEMA coloring book for kids, where you could color in the flaming World Trade Center, and then we just had a building collapse in Lower Manhattan yesterday. It's almost as if it's trying to stir up those memories and transfer them over to the pandemic fear slash econo crash. So at some point I felt compelled to just write something up really quickly and post it up as I was, you know, chatting with people and getting all kinds of news and listening to the radio and kind of getting overwhelmed with all of it. Something wicked this way comes by the pricking of my thumbs. Something wicked this way comes. And like Macbeth, are we going to find out that we're the wicked? Something strange is going on. Missing toxins at biolabs. That's, of course, USAMRIID, Fort Detrick, Maryland. And some of the things that they're missing, incidentally, 20-plus horses died of that virus in Florida. Swine flu unleashed, planes flying over New York, pandemic paranoia, single bullet specter, JFK Democrats, everybody's really all abuzz. It was in comment boards and Facebook chats and on wall postings and IMs and all fast and furious. The thing is, we just slow down and ask who's creating the hype and who's feeding into it. And maybe we're all a little guilty of both. But there was a lot of, and is a lot of, sort of fear-mongering and speculation coming from both sides of the street. Us and them. But as we see in a lot of these situations, as the old saying goes, the real action is in the reaction. A couple comments just on this short Something Wicked This Way Comes note. Rob said a note about censoring talk radio and linked to a WorldNet Daily article. Somebody else, John, posted asking if this all ties in crazily with, of course, the Summer of Rage, the Recession Rage Summer that they're hyping us up for. So was the flyover done deliberately? Well, of course it was. And we'll get into that. But the first bit that I posted up about the emergent swine flu was over on the new site, foodworldorder.com. Swine flu unleashed. Never before seen viruses hit Mexico. Now, this is coming fairly early on. This is an article by Paul Joseph Watson from the 25th. So that's last Saturday. Swine flu is a deadly mix of never-before-seen viruses. Swine flu panic is spreading in Mexico, and soldiers are patrolling the streets after it's been confirmed that human-to-human transmission is occurring and that the virus is a brand new strain which is seemingly affecting young, healthy people the worst, and that the bug is a never-before-seen intercontinental mixture of human, avian, and pig viruses from America, Europe, and Asia. Clues that the virus may be a synthetic creation are already manifesting. According to the reports, the virus is a, quote, never-before-seen form of the flu that combines pig, bird, and human viruses, which consists of an intercontinental mix, as we just mentioned. CDC officials detected a virus with a unique combo of gene segments that have not been seen in people or pigs before, AP report. Link. This strain of swine influenza that's been cultured in a laboratory is something that's not been seen anywhere actually in the United States and the world. So this is actually a new strain of influenza that's been identified. That's a quote from Dr. John Carlo, Dallas County Medical Director. This strain of swine influenza that's been cultured in a laboratory is something that's not been seen anywhere. Dr. John Carlo, Dallas County Medical Director. Alarming reports, of course, filtering all around. People catching the illness, no contact with pigs. A man and his daughter in San Diego, Imperial County, San Antonio, and on and on. We kind of know the story. So, again, this writing now almost a week ago, although the situation in the U.S. looks under control, panic is spreading in Mexico. And, of course, the danger of a full-blown pandemic. Yet, of course, the border stays wide open. And all the other things stay wide open. It did strike me at some point, it's like, is this going to be some sort of Obama-Katrina? Where you knew it was about to turn bad? And you bumbled and fumbled around. Now we can get into the incompetence theory later, but let's continue with the article. Mexico, of course, shut schools and museums, canceled hundreds of public events in the sprawling, overcrowded capital of 20 million people to try and prevent further infections. That's from Reuters. The World Health Organization insists that the outbreak has pandemic potential and has been stockpiling supplies of Tamiflu. Tamiflu, known generically as some word I can't pronounce, oseltamivir, a pill that can both treat flu and prevent infection, according to officials. So, as previously highlighted with link, those that have a stake in the Tamiflu vaccine include, of course, top globalist Bilderberg folks like George Shultz and Donald Rumsfeld, the devil. He's always there. I think he maybe even stabbed Christ in the side. I heard he was there. Indeed, Rumsfeld himself played a key role in hyping an outbreak of swine flu back in 1976 when he urged the entire country to get vaccinated. Many batches of the vaccine were contaminated, resulting in hundreds of sick people and 52 fatalities. The fact that the properties of the strain are completely new, that the virus is spreading from people to people, and that the young and healthy are being hit worst has disturbing parallels to the deadly 1918 pandemic that killed millions. We've mentioned the 1918 flu before, and we've recently mentioned that they were resurrecting it in a lab. It is unclear as to why, if the virus is a brand new strain, the public health officials are so confident
programs of mass vaccination, which are, of course, already being prepared, already being drilled, already being wargamed, already being practiced from Massachusetts to Alaska now. I can kind of fill in the parts on this article as we've seen it over the last 7 days. When the story first broke last month, Czech newspapers questioned if the shocking discovery of vaccines contaminated with the deadly avian flu virus, which were distributed to 18 countries by the American company Baxter, were part of a conspiracy to provoke a pandemic. We went over Baxter last month, shipping out live virus. And of course, the probability, nearly impossible. So if you want a little backstory, again, on how this stuff works, in 2006, it was revealed that the Bayer Corporation, our Nazi friends, they had discovered that their injection drug, which was used by hemophiliacs, was contaminated with, oops, HIV. It was called Factor VIII. So Google Factor and Roman numeral VIII, Factor VIII. Internal documents proved that after they positively knew that the drug was contaminated, they took it off the U.S. market only to dump it on the European, Asian, and Latin American markets, knowingly exposing thousands, most of them children, to the live HIV virus. Government officials in France went to prison for allowing the drug to be distributed. Documents show that the FDA colluded with Bayer to cover up the scandal and allowed the deadly drug to be distributed globally. No Bayer executives ever faced arrest or prosecution. In the U.S., that is. In the U.K., in 2007, an outbreak of foot and mouth disease that put Britain on high alert has been originated from a government lab which is shared with an American pharmaceutical company, mirroring the deadly outbreak of 2001, which was also deliberately released. That's coming from Portendown, Purbright, and Muriel. So, again, as previously reported, the flashback, and we're going to get more into Rumsfeld and Ford in 1976, where there was an outbreak, and it originated at the Fort Dix Army Base in New Jersey. So at the bottom of this first posting, and again, there's a plethora of video and audio and articles, and you're just going to get beat over the head now with an amazing array of headlines that I can't even hope to go through all of them, but they're there for you. I've saved the pages, so when things sometimes change when you go back, you at least have that original copied, and we have an interesting case of that we're going to get to towards the end of the show. The memory hole. But we've got swine flu, an advanced biowar event from Op-Ed News. CDC saying it's too late to contain the swine flu. World Health Organization, you know, putting up emergency meetings. Mexico issuing decree to inspect homes to curb swine flu outbreak. That's from the Associated Press. Mexico launches massive vaccination campaign. That's from China View. U.S. being very concerned about the swine flu outbreak. And again, this is coming from Saturday, Sunday. CDC readies vaccine in case of swine flu pandemic. That's from Time Magazine. They also ask if it'll spread beyond Mexico. Lori Price, in her fantastic website, legitgov.org, Citizens for Legitimate Government, has a good flu oddities page covering not just swine flu, but bird flu and the rest of it, where she notes that the first casualty of the swine flu was the torture memos. Remember, we were talking about the torture memos. That's right. And we were kind of figuring out that the new Change-a-Luya wasn't going to change that. Mexico City, again, launching huge campaign. We've got articles from Bloomberg and AlertNet and Breitbart and all around the world. And so that's just a little bit from foodworldorder.com. Now we move to the main posting on MediaMonarchy.com, where, of course, in a story this sort of huge, there's no way I'm going to keep putting up different posts, individual entries on the website. So as the updates came, I kept posting them to this main entry, and that's where it all kind of leads back to. The swine flu pandemic. The stand in the happening right at your door. And throughout this posting, you can watch the trailer for the admittedly quite hokey, but yet compelling nonetheless, TV film of Stephen King's The Stand. And the recent M. Night Shyamalan film, The Happening. And a much smaller film that if you haven't seen, you should track it down and it'll scare the hell out of you. It's called Right at Your Door. But before we start down this list, let's just get an interesting bit from Brian Williams and the National Broadcasting Corporation.
The outbreak of swine flu moved to a new level today. In this country, 24 new cases were reported, and hundreds more cases are suspected just in New York alone. The acting head of the CDC said he fully expects death from this infection. And the administration is asking for $1.5 billion to fight the disease. But with all of that, experts are still not certain how severe this outbreak is going to become. Nor can they say why those who have been diagnosed in this country have been able to recover so quickly when so many in Mexico could not. We have several reports, and we start with John McKenzie.
The White House request for $1.5 billion to fight swine flu underscores just how seriously they're taking this threat. Money to be used for
supplementing antiviral stockpiles, developing a vaccine, supporting the monitoring, diagnostic, and public health response capabilities, and assisting international efforts to stem this outbreak.
So what I, of course, think is the important part in that clip is where he mentioned it. This sure seems to be killing some races, but not others. We have, of course, numerous times noted race-specific bioweapons. Not a conspiracy theory. Look it up. Let's get into it. And let's note, again, some of the major bits of this. Obama was recently on his Latin American tour before this all started to go down. Obama greeted in Mexico by a man who died days later of flu symptoms. That's from Bloomberg. Another mention of that in a moment, but just the ramifications of that are kind of bizarre. And again, we're going in chronological order, kids, so here we go. Keep up. Possible outbreak at New York prep school. 8 students test probable. NBC New York, Mexico City residents staying at home. Calderon declares emergency power to quarantine. That's from Bloomberg. World Health Org declares international concern. Now, of course, in that clip, the Brian Williams, he mentioned they upped it. That was when they were going from 3 to 4. We have, of course, now gone from 4 to 5. 6 being the highest. 1,000 suspected cases as health experts consider the responses. 2 cases found in Kansas. That's from MSNBC. Likely widespread. But we get to something that definitely catches people's eye on the site and when you're talking about this. Is when you talk about a little bit of swine flu vaccination propaganda from 1976.
I don't need another flu shot. I had a flu shot last year.
A swine flu epidemic may be coming.
Swine flu shot? Well, I don't know. I've been thinking about it.
It could make you very sick.
Swine flu? Man, I'm too fast to let catch me.
You'll want to be protected.
I'm the healthiest 55-year-old you have seen. Hey, I play golf every weekend.
Get a shot of protection. The swine flu shot.
Joe brought it home from the office. He gave it to Betty and one of his kids. And to Betty's mother. But Betty's mother went back to California the next day. On her way to the airport, she gave it to a cab driver, a ticket agent, and one of the charming stewardesses. At school, Joe's kid gave it to some other kids. And Mrs. Merrill got it and gave it to her husband. In California, Betty's mother gave it to her best friend, Dottie. But Dottie had a heart condition and she died. But before she died, Dottie gave it to her girlfriend, the mailman, the pink boy, and the vet when she went to pick up her chihuahua.
If a swine swine flu epidemic comes, this is how it could spread. You'll want to be protected, especially if you're elderly or chronically ill. Get a shot of protection, the swine flu shot.
There you go, kids. What is old is new again. Gerald Ford, of course, brought in Rumsfeld and Cheney into the White House. Rumsfeld, of course, coming from a background of pharmaceutical companies with names like Gilead and Searle. So, of course, they launched this massive swine flu vaccination propaganda campaign. Like a lot of things that we're going to cover in this episode, does that sound a little familiar? Swine flu pandemic, or rather, it has the pandemic potential. And again, the aforementioned Baxter, who of course knowingly shipped out tainted vaccines, they're working on a vaccine to stop the swine flu, though of course they admitted sending live pandemic flu viruses to their subcontractor. Again, from legitgov.org. Britain quarantined as killer flu spreads. New Zealand quarantines 25. 71 deaths in Mexico likely linked to swine flu outbreak. Government responding very aggressively. Students in New York fall ill. 8 swine flu cases confirmed at New York school. Pandemic feared as swine flu spreads. World Health Org cites potential for pandemic, sparking worldwide reaction. But let's take a moment to note April 14th through the 15th was FEMA's Interagency Continuity Influenza Pandemic Tabletop Exercise. This coming from the Imperial Valley News, where they note the Houston Federal Executive Board sponsored a drill April 14th through the 15th. As I said, the long name, the Continuity Influenza Pandemic Exercise. Of course, training provided by the fine folks at the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Of course, they're involved in Rex 84, Operation Garden Plot with Oliver North and Iran-Contra and all that. Let's jump to updates from the 28th. Day by day, getting more outrageous. U.S. declares public health emergency over the spread of swine flu. Obama and flu death, again noting the connections between Obama and the archaeologist who hosted them when they were visiting in Mexico City. Felipe Solis, which of course note the sun symbology. There's videos, of course, of Obama calling, you know, for no alarm. Concern, not alarm. Travel warnings, school closings. One Homeland Security Committee member said, maybe we should seal the border. World counting down to pandemic. That's from Reuters. The new bird flu. Again, Baxter to develop swine flu vaccine despite all the things we know. Cryptagon asked the question, what do you call it when a 4-week civil contingency exercise to prepare for a flu pandemic has to be canceled due to the outbreak of a flu pandemic? What's a coincidence? From Think Progress, in an attempt to placate the white, Freudian slip, the right wing, Collins and Spector endorsed pandemic flu funding cut. That's right, in February. And this will be, of course, fodder for partisan bullshit bickering between the two phony left-right parties. They cut a bunch of money from the bill that would go to this very thing. And more on Arlen Specter in just a little bit. Single bullet Specter. Is swine flu a bioweapon? U.S. cases at 40. Watch the spread in real time. And again, even Wired Magazine and other places note, March 24th, 1976, President Gerald Ford ordered swine flu shots for all. We've got the avian flu scam. That's from Brass Check TV. Firm provides swine flu updates to agencies. That's from Federal Computer Week. Five things that Time Magazine says you need to know about the outbreak. A teleconference that was held yesterday. Advanced preparedness. James Corbett at CorbettReport.com asking the question, who profits from swine flu? The well-known detective's injunction to follow the money can apply equally well to investigations of flu epidemics as it can be, or rather, as it can to conventional criminal investigations. While global stock and commodity prices are tumbling due to the potential havoc of worldwide pandemic could wreak on markets, a Reuters article from last Friday points out that venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers is set to reap massive profits from the scare. Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers manages a biodefense fund whose portfolio includes two companies, viral enzyme blocking manufacturer BioCryst Pharmaceuticals and viral vaccine manufacturer Novavax. And, of course, their stocks are through the roof. As the article goes on, it goes through Rumsfeld, infamous investor and former chairman of Gilead Sciences, the firm that receives royalties from Tamiflu manufacturer Roche, R-O-C-H-E. And there are links to the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune and Market Watch and on and on. Again, you always ask, who profits? Or follow the money? Again, pandemic fears spread in New York, as if they didn't have enough to be afraid of this last week. Of course, we note with the press release from WHO, when they raise it to DEFCON 4, the U.S. military is monitoring the flu outbreak. That's from Breitbart, and of course we note that all the combat brigades have been brought back here to deal with civil unrest. And of course, all this hype, all this pandemic, is all another pretext for more control, more essentially world government. We've got the government template for mass vaccination, and another word on that in just a moment. U.S. declares emergency as swine flu toll in Mexico rises. Homeopathy successfully treated flu epidemic of 1918. That's from naturalnews.com. And investigative journalist Wayne Madsen, author of the website Wayne Madsen Report, and also of the radio show, and also the author of many books, with titles like How to Overthrow a Fascist Regime on $15 a Day. But recently, Wayne Madsen was featured on, of course, Russia Today, talking about how the flu just might not be naturally occurring.
An investigative journalist from Washington, Wayne Madsen, says the outbreak of the virus is raising suspicion.
I spoke to two journalists, one from Mexico City and the other one from Jakarta, Indonesia. And of course, Indonesia had a problem not long ago with bird flu. Both these journalists have been in touch with UN and World Health Organization officials, including a scientist who's dealt with Ebola virus and HIV/AIDS in Africa. And it's their conclusion, these scientists who they've spoken to, that this is a very unusual form of flu because it looks like it is a product of some gene splicing. The flu contains elements of bird flu, two forms of human flu, and various forms of swine flu. To them, it doesn't look like this is naturally occurring. The other thing is the target for this flu, as opposed to other flus, it's not the very young and the very old. It's people between the ages of 20 and 45. And the other thing is, people are not contracting this from pigs. The National Pork Council here in America says pigs are not being affected. This is human-to-human contact. So people who either eat pork or are exposed to pigs are not getting this flu. Very unusual. Of course, the scientists are very alarmed by the way it's being spread and the speed at which it's being spread.
Wayne Madsen on Russia Today. Key posts remain vacant as untested pandemic response plan implemented. That's reassuring. Swine flu epidemic enters dangerous new phase. Now I have a whole swath of articles from Alex Constantine, where he has started to note connections and intersections between the swine flu and some of the pharmaceutical companies and Flight 3407. The crash of Flight 3407, of course, in Buffalo a couple of months ago now, that, of course, among others, 49 others, killed Beverly Eckert, 9/11 widow and activist. So there are origins again and flashbacks again to 1979, a 60 Minutes report, November 4th, 1979, the origin of swine flu revisited. More swine flu profiteers. A passenger from Flight 3407 worked for Invacare, with facilities a mile and a half away from the boy in El Rey, New York, that's diagnosed with swine flu. There's a Scientology legal front, another biotech connection, bugs, bombs, and bucks, more military bioterror connections. And so all those articles are from Alex Constantine, and I haven't quite wrapped my brain around them, but hopefully, in the very near future, we might find out quite a bit more. I'll leave it at that. Dead microbiologists and the Illuminati endgame. That's from the interesting site Obaminati.info. Terrorism, depression, pandemic, and the new world order. Up on Shoutwire. World Health Organization says no evidence that this swine flu is a bioterror attack. From BusinessInsider.com, I bet you didn't hear about this. Mexico City had a 6.0 earthquake, adding insult to injury. There was a full, almost three-hour video report, a sort of emergency broadcast from Alex Jones and the InfoWars team from Saturday night. That whole video is up for you. CDC notes the swine flu cases jumped to 68. Combating swine flu hysteria. Israel calls it the Mexican flu. Container of swine virus explodes on Swiss train. Again, you can't make this up. This is Reuters. A container of flu virus samples packed in dry ice exploded on a Swiss train, injuring one person but posing no other risks to humans, police said on Tuesday. The Chicagoist, Chicagoist.com, asks if FEMA will round us up for the swine flu, sounding like crazy paranoid conspiracy theorists. There aren't supposed, laws on the books, presidential directives that say that, they can totally do all that stuff. It's conspiracy. Texas County planned a mass vaccination operation in March. North Carolina involuntarily isolating suspected swine flu patients. Mexico closes schools, again, weaponizing deadly viruses. Historical precedents. Time magazine preps Americans for mandatory vaccinations. I noted that the day before. Israel updates biodefense program to counter terror threat. And, of course, more big pharma bioterror profiteering. From Sanofi Aventis. And of course, CDC noting that they, quote, fully expect we will see deaths. And then we move to the 29th. A Russian scientist predicted swine flu in 2004. That's, of course, from Russia Today. Time asking, why is the flu deadlier in Mexico? We've got the timelines. We've got California declaring a state of emergency. More on the 1976 swine flu PSAs. Florida hospital caught in swine flu cover-up, again from Natural News. Five ways to keep your kids safe from U.S. News and World Report. Alternate notes that this crisis lays bare the meat industry's monstrous power. Hearings are, of course, set up. Some say it's traced to manure lagoons at a pig farm in Mexico. But we've got a nice flashback right back to the horse's mouth. Back to the CDC page itself. 2004. CDC to mix avian and human flu viruses in pandemic study. Well, I hope that went well for them. Homeland stupidity preps flu quarantine guidelines. That's from Raw Story. Toddler killed by swine flu in U.S. came from Mexico. And that, of course, had lots of bloviating about dirty immigrants and bullshit. Homeland Security issues alert on mandatory quarantine procedures. Dr. Lynn Horowitz notes that the Anglo-American vaccine industry is behind the swine flu outbreak. How fast could a vaccine be produced? Again, time asking all these breathless questions. What do we do? When will there be a vaccine? Texas cancels, of course, hundreds of events. Interestingly enough, now, swine flu, well, they call it a pandemic preparation bill. But let's just go ahead and call it the martial law bill that has cleared the Massachusetts Senate.
Also in Massachusetts, the legislature is acting rapidly on a bill updating what the state can do in a public health emergency. That bill has languished on Beacon Hill for some time, but with the flu outbreak, it's now racing through the legislature. NECN's Josh Brugadier is at the State House in Boston tonight. Josh.
The state Senate passed this bill, Bill 2028, today. They did so unanimously, and it gives the governor and the health commissioner the power to act in the public's interest in case in any kind of medical emergency.
Timing sped up a hearing and ultimately unanimous Senate approval of the Pandemic and Disaster Preparation and Response Bill in Massachusetts. The bill gives the public health commissioner the discretion to respond to an outbreak like the kind going on in Mexico, to close or evacuate buildings, enter private property, isolate or quarantine people, to get and distribute meds and vaccines. A registry of Massachusetts volunteers would be created and would be activated in case of emergency. Plus, the commissioner could request personnel from other states. The bill also protects health care workers from liability. Concerns about the spread of swine flu meant lawmakers, such as Worcester County Democrat Richard Moore, didn't want to take any chances.
It's too bad that we have to have something like that pending to get us to finally act, but this was actually on the calendar before that became a news story, but so it's not that it's totally that, but it does give us another reason why it's a good idea to have this on the books.
NRD, the bill has actually passed the Senate a couple times the past few years, but has never passed both the Senate and the House. The House is expected to take up the bill sometime this week.
Josh, any penalty if you don't follow the emergency declaration rules?
It can actually get to be a pretty severe penalty, because for each day someone didn't follow a rule, for example, if somebody was asked to be quarantined and they decided not to follow that, it could be a fine of up to $1,000 per day they didn't follow, and also up to 30 days in prison.
Josh Brugadier on Beacon Hill tonight. Thank you.
Or, of course, as Jello Biafra noted, anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sector after curfew will be shot. We fortunately aren't there yet. Slick Rick Perry bolstering the precautionary measures to address swine flu in Texas. That links right to governor.state.tx.us, and you can watch his long, windy press conference. And this was the guy, of course, 2 weeks ago talking about, oh, sovereignty and we'll secede. Bullshit. State of emergency, Mexican style, flying pigs, Tamiflu, and factory farms. Outbreak could be linked to Smithfield factory farms. And we're almost done. We're almost through the swine flu cavalcade. But let's put it into perspective. From someone who's always good at laying it out simply, understandably, sensibly, Ron Paul puts the swine flu into perspective.
Looks like our government's getting us pretty upset and concerned about the swine flu. This is interesting to me, not only for political reasons, but also as a physician. It makes me think back to 1976, the first year I served in the Congress. We had a vote on the swine flu. Back then, there was a panic, and they said it was going to sweep the nation, and they rapidly came up with some flu shots, and the government was going to inoculate everybody and save the world from this disaster. And I remember there were two votes against it, myself and Larry McDonald, another physician. It turned out, though, that our instincts were correct. Not only did we object to it because we didn't think the government should be in the medical business in making these medical decisions, but it turned out that the instincts were absolutely right, because the flu came and the flu went and one person died. except for those individuals who died from getting the flu vaccine. And over 25 people died just from getting the vaccine, and many got ill from it until finally they had to suspend the whole program. And here we are once again, the swine flu coming up, and everybody's panicking. And this is not to downplay the seriousness. Some people have died. Some people might die yet. We've had no deaths in this country, but there's 7 or 8 cases up in New York. None have even been hospitalized. And yet it's practically like we've been attacked by nuclear weapons. I mean, press conference over the weekend, prime item for the Department of Homeland Security. How did the Department of Homeland Security get into the medical business? You know, it just is totally, totally out of control on what they think we should do. But you know, try and put this in a perspective. I checked to find out how many cases of tuberculosis we had last year. We had about 13,000 cases of tuberculosis. Now, that's a serious disease. And also, the last time they recorded the number of deaths in this country was in 06, and there were 644 deaths from tuberculosis. Now, I hate to even bring that subject up to try to put this in a proper perspective, because maybe tomorrow they're going to quarantine everybody in the world coming into the country to watch out for tuberculosis. And all these things are very serious. The big question is a bigger government always solve these problems? They usually make things much worse. So all I'm asking people to do is step back and think for a minute rather than rushing and panicking and taking advantage of opportunities like this. This is what happens, whether they're economic problems or medical problems. The people who love big government take advantage of this. And in the Department of Homeland Security, she's really not acting outside the prerogatives of that department. And one of the reasons I voted against it, it's an open door invitation to deal with medical problems. And, of course, the way I see medical care in this country is deteriorating and the costs are skyrocketing, mainly because we had central economic planning and medicine now for 30-some years. It hasn't worked very well, so now we're about to embark on socialized medicine. But I just don't think that we need the government in this manner dealing with this problem in a hysterical manner. We ought to just sit back and think about it for a minute, and maybe we'll come to our senses. But certainly, it isn't a responsibility of the Department of Homeland Security, even though technically they might have the authority. That, to me, is not something that should be turned over to that department. That is the medical care of this country.
Ron Paul giving us a little bit of perspective on this story. And we continue. Quarantine officers monitor travelers with thermographic devices. If you'd like to see that photo, it's on the New York Times. Only 7 swine flu deaths, not 152, says the World Health Organization. Again, Homeland Stupidity setting guidelines for their possible quarantines. Socialistworker.org has capitalism and the flu. And Alternet notes flu schmoo. Forget the media hype. And as we now ramp up to level 5, pandemic level. More rapid diagnosis, notching up the terror, second highest level. We have the press release from the World Health Organization Director General when they raised it to level 5. The possible question being, like a lot of things, when they tell us it's something, it's already moved to the next level. Like when Bush is hopscotching around the country on 9/11. When they said he was in Omaha, he was already back, you know, maybe at Barksdale in Louisiana. When they say it's 4, it was probably 5, and they're saying it's 5, so it might be 6. The last dozen or so updates posted last night, April 30th. How many people die of flu every year? How many people die of swine flu? Again, the Massachusetts Senate approving their pandemic flu prep bill. That's from the Boston Herald. Obamasiah noting we'll do whatever it takes. We had a funny little typo on a Homeland Security transcript that they have actually fixed, but Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com caught it, and they've noted the correction now on the Homeland Security website and on the transcript. Originally, though, what it said was, anyone exhibiting swine flu symptoms will be evaluated before proceeding to their destruction. What they meant to say was their destination. Freudian slip, typo, eh. White House had to backtrack, of course, after Big Mouth Biden talks about how I wouldn't even get on trains or subways or any confined spaces. Of course, they had to do a little damage control and go, whoa, 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 get on message. Swine flu, the war on terror, and eugenics. Lessons from the non-pandemic of 1976. Ohio National Guard moving Tamiflu into highly secure buildings. And there are photos. And that's strange. Again, more on some of the advanced team that was with Obama in Mexico. Did they or didn't they have the swine flu? We, of course, noted Solis died the next day. Reuters asking if this is going to be mild or kill millions. Mass vaccination drill puts Alaskan health officials to practice. That's from KTW. A Bush team strategy becomes Obama's swine flu playbook. That's from the Washington Post. We, of course, noted a few days of updates back that a lot of the key posts aren't even filled as we're rushing headlong into this situation. So they basically dusted off the Bush pandemic playbook. Fox News asking the question in a video, you can watch it yourself, about whether or not it'll be martial law being declared if it's a pandemic. If the flu threat rises, the CDC wants a pandemic coordinator in workplaces. That's from Computer World. And finally, on my swine flu pandemic mega post, the stand and the happening right at your door, Matthew Rothschild at the Progressive, the man who broke the InfraGuard story, asking the question, will Northcom take over in a swine flu outbreak? I don't know what else to say. All the info is there. All the research is there. I can't really boil it down enough for you here. But if you've been a long-time listener of the show, you know that we've discussed the biolabs and the germs and the big pharma disease industry for a long, long time. We're seeing it play out massively. So thank God that's the end of the swine flu portion of our program. And I'll just take this opportunity right now to tell you, my friends, that you are listening to the 121st episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's, of course, May Day 2009, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, the Revered Radio Network, Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, and Cascadia Public Radio. And a huge thank you to the folks behind all those operations, and you who listen, or download it, or share it, or subscribe. Now we get into what definitely seems to tie into all this. All the strange cases this week. We had three. You know of the big one. I'll hit you with the other two you may not know about. It almost seemed to serve as a reminder of the fear and paranoia of 9/11 being supplanted, or being conjoined, rather, with the econo crash and pandemic fear. So as they're trying to drive the fear into you about the pandemic, they pull ops like this. The first strange case of a 9/11 reminder in the last week. Low-flying Air Force One look-alike freaks out New York. This originally from Raw Story and Raw Replay, but of course numerous links to the New York Times, the AFP, Fox News, Press TV out of Iran, on and on and on. A number of buildings in New York City were evacuated Monday morning after a trio of low-flying planes flew near the Statue of Liberty. Quote, an Air Force One lookalike, the backup plane for the one regularly used by the president, flew low over Manhattan on Monday morning, accompanied by two F-16 fighters, so Air Force photographers could take pictures. But a lack of awareness about the flyover led to the evacuation of several buildings in Lower Manhattan and Jersey City, New Jersey. And, of course, perplexed officials at the Port Authority of New York, New Jersey, and other authorities who were inundated with calls from anxious ferry passengers, office workers, and residents in the area. And again, more from myfoxny.com. I have several clips. I've edited them together. We will play them all at once, so we will go over the context for you first. Air Force photo op evokes 9/11 for New Yorkers. That's from Press TV out of Iran. And again, from Raw Story and also from InfoWars. Lawmakers express outrage over New York City plane scare. Senator Chuckie Schumer is outraged that the FAA didn't notify citizens of New York City before a plane used as Air Force One buzzed the city. It's absolutely outrageous and appalling, Schumer said. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show noted to stay the fuck away from Ground Zero. The Deutsche Press Agency, as well as The Washington Times, as well as The New York Daily News, note that, of course, the White House quickly apologized over the Air Force One blunder. The White House issued an apology Monday after the presidential plane flying low over New York for a photo shoot left people on the ground panicking over worries of a terrorist attack being underway. The massive Boeing 747, shadowed by an F-16 fighter jet, was passing over the Hudson River at times at altitudes lower than some buildings in downtown Manhattan. Hundreds of people rushed out of their offices and onto the street, fearing another 9/11-style attack. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg expressed outrage that he had not been informed of the flight, although the Air Force and FAA said local police had been informed. We have the clip, the quick clip, of Obama on the plane scare saying it was a mistake. And the last article we note from Kurt Nemo, and this kind of wraps it up, and this kind of puts a bow on it, and dispels any doubt you may have about, they're just incompetent. Manhattan flyover in the national security state. CBS in New York reports that the Pentagon knew its photo op flyover above Manhattan would raise quote-unquote public concern and frighten New Yorkers, but pulled off the stunt anyway. Federal officials knew that sending two fighter jets and Air Force One to buzz Ground Zero in Lady Liberty might set off nightmarish fears of a 9/11 replay, but they still ordered the photo op kept secret from the public.
While there may be an apocalyptic vibe in the air these days, in your mind, what would be a really great image to put in the heads of New Yorkers? Holy mother of
The Boeing 747, a plane used by the President of the United States, that is called Air Force One when the President is on board, of course, did this flyover near Ground Zero.
It's a story that goes under the heading, What Were They Thinking? A jet from the presidential fleet flew low over New York City yesterday, prompting fears of another 9/11 attack. Claire Laker reports.
This was the flyover that caused the panic. A 747 from the presidential fleet, accompanied by a fighter jet, buzzed lower Manhattan.
You know, I was down in 9/11. I don't need this twice in one lifetime. My hands are still shaking.
Thousands fearing a 9/11 repeat ran to the streets. In reality, it was just a photo op. New York's mayor wasn't notified, and he's outraged.
It was nothing more than a ill-considered, badly conceived, insensitive photo op with the taxpayers' money.
Even the president's press secretary didn't have an answer.
I have seen some news reports, but
I don't know.
The White House has apologized. Claire Lake, CBS News, New York.
Federal officials knew that sending two fighter jets and Air Force One to Buzz Ground Zero and the Statue of Liberty might set off nightmarish fears of a 9/11 replay, but they still ordered the photo op kept secret from the public. In a memo obtained by CBS 2, the FAA's James Johnson said the agency was aware of the possibility of public concern regarding DOD, Department of Defense aircraft flying at low levels in and around New York City, but they demanded total secrecy from the NYPD, the Secret Service, the FBI, and even the mayor's office, and they threatened federal sanctions if the secret got out.
To say that it should not be made public, knowing that it might scare people, it's just confounding. It's what gives Washington and government a bad name. It's sheer stupidity.
The flyover, apparently ordered by the White House Office of Military Affairs, so it would have souvenir photos of Air Force One with the Statue of Liberty in the background, had President Obama seeing red. He ordered a probe and apologized.
It was a mistake, as was stated. It was something we found out about along with all of you, and it will not happen again.
The NYPD was so upset about the demand for secrecy that Police Commissioner Ray Kelly vowed never to follow such a directive again, and he accused the feds of inciting fears of a 9/11 replay.
Did it show an insensitivity to the psychic wounds that New York City people have about 9/11?
Absolutely. No question about it. It was quite insensitive.
The cost of the frivolous flight was about $60,000 an hour, and that was just for Air Force One. That doesn't include the cost of the two F-16s that came along. In Manhattan, I'm Marcia Kramer, CBS 2 News.
And the mayoral aide who neglected to tell Mayor Bloomberg about it was also reprimanded.
By the way, you know, it's funny. This just occurred to me. You know, another way you could have gotten that picture? Photoshop. Remember? We did it. Remember? Oh, but that's right. Photoshop can look so fake. When the look of terror on so many people's faces today, you can't fake that.
It had to be terror sweat. Now, a commenter, Ed, notes at the bottom of low-flying Air Force One look-alike freaks out New York. He says, an Air Force One look-alike? Didn't know about the flyover test run. This changes everything. Wonder what's coming. And where's the look-alike? Amazingly, I was able to strike while the iron was hot, swipe the video from myfoxny.com, put it up to YouTube before anyone really had much video on YouTube about this stunt, and it went viral. In the course of now 3 days, this silent video showing the flights, as of right now, has 176,954 views. It's now easily my most viewed video on my youtube.com/mediamonarchy. Beating handily the previous runner-up, which was, of course, Glenn Beck, says New World Order is the end game. So that's amazing, and there, of course, are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bizarre comments and arguments. One thing important to note is that seemingly, from what I can tell, the guy probably in charge and to blame and who will have his head rolled for this is a guy named Louis Caldera. Caldera. And it'll be interesting to find out more about him. Strange case of 9/11 reminder number two. Alabama parents upset over FEMA coloring book with 9/11 content.
It's showing fire, severe weather, and flooding. All disasters that can have an impact on a family, especially children. All of these disasters were featured in a coloring book on the Federal Emergency Management Agency's website, designed to help children cope with disasters. But one page has parents taking the colors away.
They like to color happy pictures, not pictures like that. So they have
applied to see my child, I cut the pictures to color.
The picture she's talking about is an illustration of the World Trade Center towers in New York. One of the towers has smoke coming out of it while a plane looks to be headed towards the other. I spoke with one parent from New York.
When it happened, I was right there. I could see it from my house.
She says she thinks the picture might actually scare a child, since most might not understand the horror of 9/11.
I think there could be better solutions for a small child that's coloring. How would they color that? To be perfectly honest, that's not something that I would put in a coloring book for.
She says if you feel like your kids need to know about what happened, the best way she can think of is how she handled it when 9/11 happened right in her backyard.
To talk to them. That's the best way.
Just recently, the National FEMA website took the coloring book down. Now, they do still have a FEMA hub on their website. These just don't have anything with 9/11 in them. I spoke to FEMA officials today, and this is the statement they released.
We removed the content from our website after reviewing www.fema.gov/kids for appropriate material. FEMA for Kids assists children in understanding disasters, and we will continue to post appropriate material that supports its mission. FEMA for Kids not only includes the coloring books, but also has stories from other kids who have gone through disasters, ways to put together a kid survival kit, and helpful activities kids can take part in. For Fox 10 News, I'm Chastity Bird.
Oh, comic books are stranger than fiction. Thankfully, the always amusing thesmokinggun.com has the entire 25-page FEMA coloring book that you can download as a PDF. And as they note, FEMA cite Yank's scary coloring book depicting 9/11 attacks. And again, that video grabbed from Fox 10 TV was put up to youtube.com/media monarchy. Finally, thirdly, the third strange case of 9/11 reminders in this last week. Just last night, a landmarked building in Lower Manhattan collapsed. And so, we note, planes buzzing downtown, buildings collapsing. Is this all starting to seem a little somewhat familiar? From the Deutsche Press Agency, New York authorities on Thursday investigated a rundown five-story building that collapsed in Lower Manhattan without causing any injuries. I've seen some reports that say there are a few injuries. The city's Department of Buildings said the building was under renovation and collapsed before dawn. The debris covered several vehicles. News reports said the building's owner had applied to demolish most of the old building before it collapsed, after the structure had apparently violated several building codes before the accident.
71 Reed Street, a vacant five-story brick landmark building from the 1800s. This is all that was left of it after the front of the structure collapsed at around 6:15 Thursday morning, just a couple of blocks from City Hall.
I thought maybe some truck hit the building, but what I saw was like the building fell down.
I just heard a big loud boom come down and smoke and everything, and everybody came from all over trying to see what happened.
The collapse occurred just before people in the neighborhood would have been on their way to work.
The material landed on the sidewalk as well as the street. We had preliminary information that there was no one at the site or in the area from an eyewitness when the structure collapsed.
Still, the fire department conducted a search of the rubble to make sure no one was inside.
We worked in conjunction with the PD with their rescue dogs for preliminary searches.
The building's department was here on Tuesday, and they ordered the owner of the building to shore up the interior and exterior of the structure.
We do know that this building was fragile.
The Mondry noted that the building was next door to an active construction site.
We'll be doing interviews to understand from the workers on the job site to make sure that nothing was going on that shouldn't have been.
Back on April 10th, the city cited the property for having unrepaired cracks on its parapet and windowsills. And on Wednesday, less than a day before the collapse, violations were issued for loose bricks and cracks. Meanwhile, a neighboring landmark building is in danger of having to be demolished.
That building next door is 69. We'll make a determination if that building needs to be shored or must come down.
According to the Landmarks Preservation Commission, the owner of the buildings had planned to convert them into a hotel. A permit for a rooftop addition, new storefronts, and interior work was approved in December. In Manhattan, Roger Clark, New York 1.
All three of those strange 9/11 reminders have videos swiped by me. That last one was from New York One and put up to youtube.com/media monarchy. I would like to put the idea out there and the thought out there that if you dig the videos that are up on my channel, that you should pull them down and save them or repost them, because you never know at what point they may say, you have too many violations and we're pulling your account. Which is what happened to my Media Monarchy Google video account about 2 years ago. Had a ton of amazing videos up there. Of course, with Google Video, there was no time limit, so there were full-length documentaries and amazing things. They killed it, and they're all gone. And I, of course, never went back to uploading anything that big again. So most of the clips on my YouTube channel are shorty news clips that I've swiped from small news agencies. But enough about that. On to another big story. Single bullet specter and the balance of pirate power. What does that mean? Big, interesting, awesome hat tip to my man Johnny. Sends me lots of links, lots of headlines. He gets extra credit on this one as checking out, of course, the story being that long-serving Republican Senator Arlen Specter has defected from the GOP to the Democrats. Like some type of world wrestling move. I'm a bad guy. Showbiz. Why this is such a big deal to the Dems is, of course, it gets them closer to the magic number of, I believe, 60. Or it puts them within one seat of the 60 needed in the 100-seat Senate to overcome Republican attempts to block votes on legislation, and enhances President Barack Obama's ability to advance his ambitious legislative agenda. So this first report is from the Deutsche Press Agency with interesting links. You can read some of the historical notes about Single Bullet Specter, where, of course, he sided with Clarence Thomas against Anita Hill. He did call out Bill Clinton for bombing to perhaps distract from Lewinsky. And he's always wrapped up in FISA and God knows what else. Oh, and of course, we just noted a little while ago that in kowtowing to the phony right wing, that they all helped cut millions and millions and millions of dollars from the pandemic section of the big trillion-dollar bonanza. Attempts to block votes on legislation. You'll sometimes hear the term filibuster. So, the interesting note on this is if you look up the word filibuster, and it's F-I-L-I-B-U-S-T-E-R. If we go to Online Etymology Dictionary, etymonline.com, filibuster, noun, 1587, as flibutur, pirate. Probably from ultimately the Dutch, meaning freebooter. Used 1850s and 60s of lawless adventurers from the U.S. who tried to overthrow Central American countries. The legislative sense is first recorded circa 1851, probably because obstructionist legislators pirated debate. Not technically restricted to the U.S. Senate, but that's where the strategy works best. We can also hop over to Wikipedia for the entry on filibuster. And again, its origins, obstruction. The term filibuster was first used in 1851. It was derived from the Spanish filibustero, meaning pirate or freebooter. And of course, as it winds its way, adventurers, southern states, overthrowing Central American governments. It's a tactic for pirating or hijacking debate. So chalk that one up on the pirate meme. Filibuster means pirate. And if there's a more descriptive word for these criminal Congress critters, I'd like to hear it. Senator Arlen Specter, who has served as a Republican in Congress for nearly 30 years, announced Tuesday that he has switched parties, inching the Democrats closer to a supermajority in the Congress's upper chamber. We move on to KYW1060.com. Specter's flirtation with the Democratic Party has been long. He had recently noted just a couple months back at a dinner or something that he was a JFK Democrat long before becoming a Republican. So there's a JFK reference that he made. To put this into perspective, and I know a guy at work when this broke and we talk news and politics and stuff, and I came into work and he was like, "What do you think of Specter?" And I said, "Oh, single bullet Specter." Most people don't know, and we're going to jump to Copycat Effect from Lauren Coleman to read about Specter and Oswald. Lest we forget, Arlen Specter has been involved in conspiracies for a long time, and Lee Harvey Oswald remains on his mind. Don't take my word for this. We'll read what he said today. But first, a bit of background. Guess who invented the magic bullet theory? The magic bullet theory, or single bullet theory, was introduced by the Warren Commission to explain how three shots supposedly made by Lee Harvey Oswald resulted in the assassination of JFK. The theory is credited to Warren Commission staffer Arlen Specter. Specter proposed that a single bullet, known of course as Warren Commission Exhibit 399, labeled CE-399, caused all of the non-fatal wounds in both Kennedy and Connolly on November 22nd, 1963, on the 33rd parallel, Dealey Plaza, the site of the first Masonic Temple in Dallas, Texas. The fatal head wound to JFK was caused by a bullet other than this alleged magic bullet. So, on the day that he announced his party switch, on April 28th, as the media swarmed and tried to interview Senator Arlen Specter about his jump from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, he is reported to have said, quote, "I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald had this big a crowd trailing him." What a curious thing to say. And that sources back to Politico.com. We unfortunately do not have or have not heard a recording of him saying that yet. An update from Chris Floyd. The Specter spectacle hides the deadly new folly in the war of terror. But we'll close off the single bullet Specter and the balance of pirate power with a quick extract from Lisa Pease. Historian, author, researcher, movie buff, frequent guest on blackopradio.com, and also writes for Real History Archives. Specter's JFK Specter. Given that Arlen Specter has decided to leave the Republican Party, I think it's worth examining his history to see if he's going to be an asset or a burden. So, of course, while Specter is perhaps most famous for coming up with the single bullet theory, which purports that one bullet entered and exited two people seven times, only to emerge nearly intact, his legislative efforts of late also give cause for concern, and she goes into that, but jumping down to the bottom. So why would the Democrats want Specter in their corner? The magic number. 60 votes. A filibuster-proof majority. The holy grail of any administration. I can understand why Obama himself has said he'll raise money for Specter, but given Specter's history, I can't help but feel the Democrats are welcoming the fox into the henhouse. I really do dig Lisa Pease's work. It has been interesting over the last year and a half to see her go gaga for the Obama Sia. Hopefully we're going to talk to her soon on the show. We might not get into anything contentious like that. We may talk about media and memes and alternative history. There's an interesting comment from ReaganiteRepublicanResistance.blogspot.com at the bottom of this single bullet Specter posting. And among other things, they basically said, yeah, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. I know it's becoming much more common. The news is an avalanche that I can't keep up with, and I must just keep posting up the headlines to put it on the record, saving the articles, posting it up. It's there. You can check it out for yourself. It's the May Day news purge. So let's start with Obamasiyah and the Apostles of War. Top Dems complicit in torture cover-up. Obama, of course, has rejected the fabled Truth Commission, or the Truth Panel. That's from the Washington Post. Obama legal team wants defendants' rights limited. That's from the Huffington Post. Court fortunately rebuffs the feds and reinstates the torture suit. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. From Threat Level and from Wired, state secrets cannot hide the CIA torture program. An appeals court has ruled. This involves Jeppesen, a subsidiary of private military contractors, Boeing, kidnapping people and flying them to places where they can torture. And the Obama administration is just fine to keep fighting the same battle that the previous administration was. State secrets. Can't know. Dems refused to allow a skeptic to testify alongside Gore at a congressional hearing recently. That's from ClimateDepot.com. And in video and in article, Gore denies that Ken Lay, the late Ken Lay of Enron fame, and Goldman Sachs CEOs helped develop this carbon tax CO2 trading scheme. Gore denies it, but he can't. You can see it on many levels. It's what always happens. The biggies, rather than compete with anything, buy it up or co-opt it. So you're going to see all the major gas companies now get in front of suppressing or misdirecting alternative energies and electric cars and all that. And they act like they're green. And you still give them money when you put terror juice in your fucking car. Hillary Clinton compared Margaret Sanger to Thomas Jefferson. But we're not going to go there right now. However, we did mention last week, and I do have the clip because it's too funny and interesting not to play. Hillary hearts Ron.
At the risk of going over our time, I just want to say, having campaigned during the last presidential election, you had the most enthusiastic supporters of anybody I ever saw.
I love to hear that.
Well, I mean, my goodness, everywhere I went, they were literally running down highways holding your signs. Now, I've never had a chance to tell you that, but your message obviously resonated with a lot of people.
Thank you.
You're going to encourage him.
But the rest of us don't need encouraging, and the reason there were so many people was because it was real. It was actual grassroots. It was not Ford Foundation-funded phony left cover bullshit. Alex Constantine asking the question, why did Porter Goss finger Jane Harmon? And it is and isn't as disgusting as that may sound. That, of course, tying into Jane Harmon and the wiretap. Remember last week we went over that wiretap of Jane Harmon saying she was going to help out Weissman and Rosen and their AIPAC espionage charges, as long as Pelosi gave her a seat on the committee of her choice. That's right, they threw out that case now. We just read that at the top of the show. Jane Harmon, of course, the corrupt Democratic congressperson, congress critter. One of the ones behind the Homegrown Terror and Violent Radicalization Act. Sebelius has been confirmed as health secretary. Amnesty International says that Obama so far has failed to deliver, at least on human rights. Threat Level notes of the vaunted 100 days, high marks for science, low marks for privacy. A fact check from the Associated Press on, you know, and I have heard it said that, oh, God, he's quite the media hog with all his little primetime press conferences. He just needs to be adored. In that speech, the AP fact checking him on him trying to disown the deficit that he helped shape. while he was in the Senate. And of course, we noted Souter retiring in June. And I suppose it is a fortunate thing that Obama will get to appoint someone to the Supreme Court. You know, that body that they're appointed, we don't vote on them, and they can serve until they die. And sometimes they step in and appoint presidents. So sometimes unappointed bodies appoint presidents over us. And we just go, hey, you watch American Idol? But let's get into Police State International. Arizona Department of Public Safety and U.S. Marshals merge to track fugitives. That's from azcentral.com. There is audio and articles on the U.K. police caught on tape trying to recruit a protester as an informant. We've talked about the informants many, many times. Multinational forces storm Florida's Mayport Beach for drills. Northcom and Fort Monroe, Virginia to host military exercises on May 6th. 91 protesters arrested at the White House. Senate approves bill to stop the Real ID in Oregon. Surveillance effort draws civil liberties concerns. That's from the New York Times. Kellogg, Brown, and Root awarded a Homeland Stupidity contract worth up to $385 million. Noted author and economist Paul Craig Roberts notes that America is no longer ruled by law. Networkworld.com notes colossal spy airships with 15-story radars get a $400 million reality check. That's, of course, the spy blimps that have already been around, but they just recently wanted to announce it to us. And investigation ordered into Virginia Fusion Center document. That is from Common Dreams by way of press release from the ACLU. I am enjoying watching places like, and organizations, and well-meaning organizations ultimately, like the ACLU and Amnesty International, finding themselves in a spot now where it's like, hey, I'm starting to get the feeling that we got fucking hosed again. And the sooner they figure that out, the better we're all going to be as they start to push on these issues. And again, all the things that the previous puppet set up, we're not undoing. Cyber space war, of course, is coming soon. That's the other thing they're prepping us for. The next generation arms race begins with Internet 2. This is a bizarre article from Raw Story. The next generation arms race begins, where they note from the New York Times, and we'll just hit a little pull from it. Just as the... No, that's not the right part. There's a part where it basically mentions the, quote, highly classified replica of the Internet of the future. It's Internet 2. Or worse. Gates to nominate NSA chief to head new cybercom. That's from the Wall Street Journal. If you recall last week, we had the NSA saying, we don't want to run cybersecurity. But it's all being rolled into the DOD. Security experts debate federal approach to cybersecurity. Cyber panic, it sells, notes Danger Room. How anonymous hackers triumphed over time. And that would be Skull and Bones Time magazine. The hackers from Anonymous, enemies of Scientology, 4chan.org, hacked into a poll at Time magazine and made their leader themselves, someone who goes by the name of Moot, as the most influential. They hacked the poll in an amazing fashion. You should check the story out. How anonymous hackers triumphed over time. U.S. cybersecurity is embarrassing, says the BBC. Two big contracts to our private military contractor friends at Science Applications International, SAIC. $11 million from DARPA and $28 million from the Space and Naval Warfare Systems Center. You can look at some interesting secret military installations in Google Earth thanks to My Technology World 9. On the drug war, again, the media, as we've noted, getting high on possible legalization, or at least decriminalization. Should the U.S. decriminalize marijuana? That's from the Washington Times. America's schizoid pot culture. 4 in 10 have smoked it and millions are still getting busted. That's from Alternet. And Mexico on path to decriminalize personal possession of drugs. That's from Wikinews. Some media memes. There's a trailer to the forthcoming documentary from Josh Reeves called The Secret Right. And that's about the not exactly shadowy, but not very well known or spoke of Council for National Policy, CNP. Secret Right. DVD copying case focuses on fair use, and the public was booted from this DVD copying trial because they might find out secret CSS code. Both from Threat Level. Internet group attacks websites in Operation Bailout, as in Bay Pirate Bay. The pirateers fighting back. English transcript, finally, of the Pirate Bay guilty verdicts. You can download those PDFs again. Always good stuff from Threat Level. SCOTUS actually upheld the government ban on fleeting profanities. Fleeting fucking profanities. So ridiculous that at some point we decided that was really dirty. But that, for some reason, that's okay. Arbitrary bullshit. ABC fiercely defends notoriously desperate reporter. That's from Gawker, and that's about Brian Ross. And it runs down the shit list of things I was not aware about Brian Ross and some of the lies and some of the stories that he covers and recovers. World-renowned pianist declares he will not return to the U.S. So, I had never heard of this guy, but at a concert, Christian Zimmerman, one of the world's most well-regarded concert pianists, said he will not turn to the U.S. because of the nation's military policies and Obama's support for a missile shield in his home country of Poland. Christian Zimmerman's home country of Poland. He made this announcement at a Walt Disney concert hall, and needless to say, it didn't go over real well. Censors for talk radio expected within 90 days. That's that aforementioned WorldNet Daily article. The fairness doctrine, is it coming? On the geopolitics tip, Pakistan President Zardari says Osama might not exist anymore. James Corbett notes that Tony Blair's Catholic gambit has paid off. Basically, if you want the sort of EU chancellorship, if you want to be a mover and shaker in the city of London, you got to convert to Catholicism. Angels and demons, baby. Hugo Chavez donates island to New Jersey. That's from Philist.com. Turkey and Syria hold military exercises. Israel, no happy, no likey. Poor Israel. Poor defenseless multi-trillion dollar defense budgets. Israel. Operation Arabian Gauntlet. 13 nation navies complete a Gulf anti-terror exercise. So terror drills and war games going on all around. We just brace ourselves that we don't see some ridiculous speedboat you are going to explode or Gulf of Tonkin event. A couple of interesting notes. Fort Dix plotters sentenced to life in prison, while UK court finds 3 not guilty of aiding 7/7 bombers. And a little history mystery note. Evidence of 1948 Malaysian massacre by UK troops to be reviewed. That's from the BBC. Disturbing notes on the Econo crash. But first, a funny one. But we're not going to play the clip from The Onion, the great new reality show where auto workers compete to keep their jobs and livelihoods. Oliver Stone is apparently down for the Wall Street sequel. Although it basically sounds like Fox said, we're going to do this. Do you want in? He said, yeah, okay. And top Senate Democrat Dick Durbin, he kind of let it slip out in a way that bankers, quote unquote, own the U.S. Congress. Let's get that full quote. Let's hop over to Glenn Greenwald. More good work. And the banks. Hard to believe in a time when we're facing a banking crisis that many of the banks created are still the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill, and they frankly own the place. Whoops. And two last local bits. Safety lapses led to the Bayer pesticide factory explosion in West Virginia. That was back in September of last year. With the flashback link for you, Bayer pesticide factory explosion in West Virginia kills one. And on the Pacific Northwest note from gas2.org, Portland will continue as sustainability leader and hub for the electric car industry. And we'll just see how that goes. A little more and a couple more on the new financial world order. An interesting, amazing cartoon, comic strip, single panel, call it what you want. I posted it up as large as I could so you could bask in the glory of a Chicago Tribune cartoon from 1934 that notes at the top, planned economy or planned destruction? And it basically shows the bandwagon riding away with the young pinkies from Columbia and Harvard and Wallace and others shoveling money out of the back of it. On the back of the wagon, it says, depleting the resources of the soundest government in the world. And in the bottom corner, it notes, plan of action for the U.S., spend, spend, spend under the guise of recovery, bust the government, blame the capitalists for the failure, junk the Constitution, and declare a dictatorship. Again. I say again way too many times. But there's a reason. This is all very familiar. I just read to you a cartoon from 1934. And it's what's happening now. Chrysler has filed for bankruptcy. Chapter 11. They'll, of course, get a little 8-bill infusion. They're now going to be joined at the hip with Fiat. But from Reuters, Chrysler filed for bankruptcy on Thursday after talks to restructure its debt with lenders broke down. Despite intense negotiations over the past few weeks, Chrysler failed to gain the full support from its lenders to avoid the first ever bankruptcy filing by a major U.S. automaker. At the same time, Chrysler, as expected, entered into an alliance with Italian automaker Fiat, where it sold a stake starting at 20%, and in which Fiat can become the majority owner once the government loans are repaid. The Chapter 11 filing in U.S. bankruptcy court in Manhattan will send shockwaves through the entire industry. That includes Chrysler's rivals, suppliers, dealers, and the hundreds of thousands who rely on the industry for their livelihoods. As part of the filing, the U.S. Gov will provide up to $3.5 billion in debtor in possession of financing, DIP, and up to $4.5 billion in exit financing. Obama said he hopes the entire bankruptcy process will only take 30 to 60 days. And you can see the video and read more about his other big press conference, this time on the Chrysler bankruptcy. The other quick post on the increasing Econo crash. Here we note the IMF, the CFR, and protesters all queuing up for conflict. We first note from Cryptagon that, among other hardships, and we see it around the world, we see it in Greece, we see it in Iceland, Iceland now being assimilated into the EU. Once we destroy your economy, you'll have no choice but to be subsumed by the Borg. Hundreds queue up for a low-wage retail job in Dublin, Ireland.
It became known as the Celtic Tiger. Ireland's economy awash with cash off the back of two decades of cheap credit and low income tax. The Celtic Tiger is dead. The streets of Dublin still gleam, the Tiger's legacy. But with jobs disappearing by the thousand each week, welfare queues are forming for the first time since the early 90s. By night, rising numbers of those who've lost everything.
The County Tiger is not just dead, I think it's extinct. We're never going to go back to the era of 7, 8, 10% growth. We're looking at possibly up to a 10% fall in national income this year. We're looking at unemployment rising certainly into the mid, if not high teens.
In the town of Waterford, a world-renowned Irish brand, along with hundreds of jobs, also gone. Ian Paul worked as a craftsman at Waterford Crystal for 42 years, until the company unexpectedly went into receivership in January.
Well, that's absolutely devastating. I mean, it's totally heartbroken at this stage. Like, when it's your whole life here, something like this happens, this is one of those things you just could never see coming. The government should hang their heads in shame, because they have stepped back from this totally.
But the government has bigger concerns among the dwindling tax revenues that once drew heavily on a burgeoning property and construction market, now at a standstill.
Not long ago, another iconic Irish brand, the rock band U2, decided to build Ireland's tallest building here in Dublin's dilapidated Docklands. It was to have included luxury apartments and a recording studio for the band, rising like an exclamation mark over the boomtown capital. But now the project is in mothballs. Graffiti around the construction site recalls some of the optimism U2 Tower would have stood for.
Moving quickly now, as we're running quickly out of time, it's the lightning round. Regulators shut banks last FDIC Friday in Georgia, Michigan, California, and Idaho. That would bring the total to 29, more than 2008 had in the entire year. So we have yet to see what banks will close on this FDIC Friday. Corporate CFR members get the most bailout money. That's from thenewamerican.com. Protesters and police clash near IMF meetings in D.C. 7 people were arrested near the IMF's Washington headquarters last Saturday as they tried to stop meetings taking place inside. We have a quick update on the Freddie Mac David Kellerman suicide story. Now, apparently, there's a gun involved. And the last bit from early this morning, a Clinton-era lawyer, Mark I. Levy of Bethesda, Maryland, has killed himself over the loss of his job. We now move, and that segues quite easily, into the latest hack and slash of murder and mayhem, suicide, regicide, and the second shooter memory hole. But let's get a little perspective first, because, of course, for the last several weeks, we have been talking about the mass murder contagion, the copycat effect, and the anniversaries, of course, of all the Columbine, Virginia Tech, Waco, Oklahoma City. And I do have a good update to give you at the end of this. But first, a little perspective on all this. April was the bloodiest month in Iraq in a year as security plummets. And, of course, they're already looking at perhaps maybe reviewing some of those, you know, draw down guidelines. Change. More southern shootings. On April 25th, within minutes of each other, 2 multiple shootings apparently issuing from domestic violence situations left 6 people dead in Georgia and Florida. In the Florida case, the shooter died. More on that from Copycat Effect, as well as Army Times. That's right, because the one in Florida, he was, of course, a military guy. Top cancer scientist commits suicide by use of deadly chemicals. That's from express.co.uk. U.S. plane forced to land in incident with rampaging passenger from the Deutsche Press Agency, as well as the Boston Globe and WCVB. A Delta Airlines plane on a flight from New York to Tel Aviv was forced early Saturday to make an emergency landing in Boston, again at Logan Airport. Remember the Marine who snuck in a bunch of bomb-making materials last week and got busted? The report said that some 2 hours after the fully loaded Boeing 767 took off, a man tried to storm the cockpit. 5 passengers managed to overpower him and keep him tied down with a safety belt until the plane could land at Logan. The man was described as a 22-year-old Israeli. And it's funny, if you go to the Press TV article, they just say, Israeli man fails to hijack U.S. plane. Of course, always stoking the hatred. Again, on Flight 3407, we wonder about who this acting NTSB chairman, Mark Rosenker, is. But from Russia Today, there was a massacre in a Moscow supermarket. A Moscow police officer who went on a shooting massacre through a supermarket on Monday has caused outrage from human rights activists and lawmakers in Russia who are calling for, you guessed it, stricter gun controls and police reform. Denis Yasukov shot 3 dead and wounded another 6. UK teenager dies in double stabbing. 10 tourists killed in California bus crash. 5 killed in what is being called this assassination attempt on the Dutch royal family. Of course, gangsters, pirates, inbred elite. Going way back. Royal Dutch Shell. Bilderbergers. Queen Beatrix. The video is disturbing. Basically, it was a big holiday. It was big Queen's Day, and people take off work, and we all celebrate the inbred royalty, and we all wave at them as they go by on their open-topped bus. A guy plowed through the crowds, killed 5 people, crashed into a barrier, and now he has himself died. And they're basically calling it an assassination attempt. The last note on this bit of murder and mayhem was something I saw late 2 nights ago as I was falling asleep. It was very late in the evening, and I saw that, of course, on the other side of the world, it was the daytime, and that at a university in Azerbaijan, a gunman killed 13 at a college. And I saw this report from The Guardian, and I read through it. And I thought, even though it was 3 in the morning, I should save that as a PDF and maybe, you know, because I don't know if it'll change or update. So, 13 people shot dead, another 13 injured after a student went on the rampage at his campus in Baku, the capital of the oil-rich Caspian state of Azerbaijan. The student, identified as Nadir Shirhanoglu, opened fire after a dispute with other members of his college faculty. He then shot himself in the head. However, from the original Guardian story, that is now, needless to say, gone down the memory hole, and perhaps it was all incorrect information. But we don't know. Here's what the original report said. Again, from The Guardian. Russian news agencies identified the gunman as a Georgian citizen, Mursal Gamadov, not Nadir Shirhanoglu. The shootings may have broken out following a row between a rival group of foreigners at the college and Azeri students, the agency suggested. The Azeri press agency quoted a senior police officer as saying that the gunmen were terrorists who had to be neutralized. A student told the news agency Reuters he believed 2 gunmen were involved. As always seems to be the case, early on, there are always reports of second shooters, multiple devices, but those things go down the memory hole. And in the world of the internet, it can literally happen in the blink of an eye. It was never there. Save the articles, screen grab, print them, PDFs, archive it. So it's now fitting that we wrap up the show after that barrage of murder and mayhem. Last Sunday, I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with Evan Long, the creator of the Columbine Cause, a full-length documentary examination on the April 20th, 1999 attack on Columbine High School. This interview is its own standalone episode, special interview episode from Media Monarchy, trying to bring more and more of those to you. We, of course, several weeks ago had Spencer Thayer of ChicagoCopWatch.org, and as I kind of hinted throughout the show, several other really interesting interviews that I'm trying to line up. So this 45-minute podcast, like I say, is an episode unto itself featuring the high production quality you've come to expect from MediaMonarchy.com. And again, a big thanks to Evan. He turned this podcast into 4 YouTube clips. So that playlist, that video is embedded for you. So you can listen to the audio or you can watch the YouTube clip and follow the bouncing ball. But did you know that whenever a witness identified someone besides Eric Harris or Dylan Klebold by name as having been an attacker, the name was always redacted in the official reports? Did you know that the lead FBI investigator's son not only helped found the Trenchcoat Mafia, but also made a parody video showing the destruction of the school 2 years before the massacre actually happened? Hitman for Hire was the name of the video. So it's questions like these and many, 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 many other discrepancies that are at the heart of Evan Long's feature-length investigation into the Columbine calls. So in this 45-minute special interview episode from Media Monarchy, we talk about everything from the shooters, copycats, false flag terror, and tons more. Another hat tip to my man James Corbett. We mention in this interview with Evan Long about the Columbine calls that Oprah was going to run a show on the anniversary, but at the last minute decided not to. James Corbett was able to get a video from her YouTube channel before they pulled the show. So we have a clip of Oprah talking to lead Columbine FBI investigator Dwayne Fusilier about Dylan and Eric, even though his son Scott was intimately involved in all of it, as were guys with the names like Chris Morris and Robert Perry. But that's going to do it. Mayday, mayday, mayday. This has been episode 121 of MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, the 1st of May, 2009. As always, Portland Radio Authority, Revere Radio Network, Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, and Cascadia Public Radio. But we have to look at some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. It's always interesting to see who's landing on my site and why and how they got there. Sometimes scary and bizarre and funny and interesting and just all around entertaining. So let's start at the top of the list. Fort Bragg, bragg.army.mil out of Lexington Park, at least where their IP was routed through. They were on MediaMonarchy.com. The Loudoun County Department of Information Tech Googled William Bennett murder update. I believe MediaMonarchy.com being the site that has the most information to offer on the strange murder of ex-CIA contractor William Bennett. He was, of course, murdered in Loudoun County, so that's why their Department of Infotech is Googling it. Washington Mutual out of Seattle Googled low-flying conspiracy. The Associated Press out of New York City Googled Free Republic Pearl Harbor. Turner Broadcasting System out of Atlanta Googled swine flu, The Stand. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada Googled Air Force One lookalike. DARPA was visiting MediaMonarchy.com, as again the Loudoun County Department of Infotech. The Senate of California in Sacramento, California Googled sample, swine flu, tabletop. Tabletop referring to, of course, the tabletop exercises that they were doing April 14th. L'Oreal USA. Someone there Googled Project Bluebeam Air Force One over the Hudson, putting the idea that I did not have at all in my head that the planes buzzing Ground Zero the other day with the Air Force One lookalike was some sort of holographic projection. The U.S. Army, the Navy Network Information Center, the League of American Theaters and Producers, American Airlines, they Googled Lusitania War, swine flu. Wachovia out of Winston-Salem Googled planned economy or planned destruction, cartoon, Chicago Tribune. As did Merrill Lynch out of New York, 1934, Chicago Tribune, planned economy or planned destruction. Our friends at SAIC, Science Applications International, Googled Empire, 09, exercise, FEMA. Empire is the name of one of the sub-exercises of the soon-to-come Northrop Grumman FEMA National Level Exercise 09 coming up at the end of July. Finally, visiting MediaMonarchy.com out of Seattle, Washington, it's your favorite private military contractor and mine, sponsor of the Oregon Zoo, and of course, owner of Jeppesen, who kidnaps people to send them off to places where they can be tortured. That's right, it's Boeing. And they Googled pandemic plus The Stand. can't make that shit up, folks. It's real. And I'll keep bringing it to you as long as my nose doesn't clog up from snot, not the flu. It's allergies. We'll somehow keep doing this, and we'll somehow get through it all. Again, watch for cool interviews coming up from perhaps folks like James Corbett, Alex Constantine, and Lisa Pease. That's going to do it for May Day, episode 121. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man Webster Griffin Tarpley says, and I would add now more than ever, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.